welcome to Basic Black. Some of you are joining us on our broadcast, and others of you are joining us on our digital platforms. I'm Callie Crossley, host of Under the Radar 89.7. Tonight, building community wealth. We, like you, are dealing with the effects of the coronavirus pandemic and are taking precautions. We are working with limited staff, and our guests are joining us remotely. Black and brown households own only about 15 to 20% of the average white household, according to research by the Federal Reserve. How to close the ongoing racial wealth gap? With an inclusive model of investment known as community wealth building. Residents of black and brown communities come together to invest their money, time, and talent to build equity in their neighborhoods. Is community wealth building the roadmap to economic prosperity for these communities? Joining us remotely, Nia Evans, Executive Director of the Boston Ujima Project. Terry Williams, President and COO of One United Bank and Board Chair for the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts, or BECMA. Nia Grace, owner of Daryl's Corner Bar and Kitchen in Roxbury and the Underground Cafe and Lounge at Northeastern University. And Teron Dorsey, co-founder of the Jazz Urbane Cafe Development in the historic Bowling Building and a member of the GBH Board of Advisors. Welcome to you all. Terry Williams, I'm starting with you because I want to put everybody on the same page. So what is community investing? What do we mean by this mode of investing? And how is it different, community wealth building? How is it different from the kind of wealth building you would do individually?
Mm-hmm. Now, first of all, thank you for having me, Callie. So yes, community investment is really different in that it is focused on, and it could be a geographic community, it could be a defined community. In our case, I think all of us would focus on the geographic community of and particularly Boston, of Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, some parts of Jamaica Plain. But it's really focusing on a particular community and saying, how can we build wealth in this community? And that could be through community development projects, as well as what can we do for individual families to help them build wealth. And we focus on both.
Okay. Nia Evans, you're head of the Boston Ujima Project, which is a participatory model for community wealth building. I'm going to get to some details of that, of how the membership works in just a second. But first, why is this model, do you think, so very important, particularly for black and brown communities?
Thank you, Callie. So I think this model is particularly important for black and brown communities because when we, an important part of community wealth building is governance and decision-making and deciding where our assets and our wealth, whatever it looks like, goes. And what we've seen historically is that in black and brown communities, we've been historically disinvested. So that means that our wealth and our assets that we've worked hard to accumulate have been taken from us and have been put to uses that have not been good for our communities and have not met our community's needs. And then even just more collective wealth. So not necessarily wealth that is ours, but wealth that is more collective in sense of a city or a neighborhood or the nation, again, has not been used to prioritize meeting the needs of our communities. And so it's important that we look to models that center our needs, that center our expertise, that center our experiences, and that also acknowledge the wealth that we have created, and that acknowledge that we should have control over the wealth that we've created.
So picking up on that, Nia Grace, one of the things that you are very interested in becoming connected with the Ujima Project, and specifically the Jazz Urbane Cafe as one of its potential investments, is really about bringing different voices to the table. And if you pick up on what Nia Evans said about people in the community having a say about it, just expound on that, about why this then is very different from what often happens in these communities.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me as well. When I think about the self-sufficiency that I hear that Nia Evans is really speaking of in terms of that reinvestment in our own communities, it allows for us to really focus on the needs of, and the direct needs of. As a business owner, we often, have an idea and want to create and provide something that's of service to the neighborhood that we will be in. And we might often do that in silos. And so in this instance, we're able to hear directly from the people who live there, who work there, who are going to frequent there, who are going to be our direct customers on a regular basis. I think that it allows us to have a better footing as a business, to make sure that we are providing the direct needs and actually really answering a call, not one that is supposed, but that one isn't, that is truly informed and directed.
Okay. And Teron, one of the things that I thought you said was so interesting was that when folks in these communities often only know investment, if at all, from a kind of construction and zoning place, not from a more, I guess, prospective way of mm-hmm. being involved in making those decisions. Talk about that a bit.
So I think when you talk about the development of places like Nubian Square, which is going to look radically different in 5 years, we are glad that the Jazz Urbane is coming to Nubian Square. When you consider Richard Taylor's project at Nubian Ascends, Benjamin Franklin coming to Nubian Square, a lot of the conversations that get framed around it are about what that means from a land use perspective. You're either for that and you see some of the benefits, or you're participating in those public meetings to lodge your complaint about it. Very rarely do we have kind of surround sound 360 conversations about the full value and how community participates in the value of those projects and how we structure the benefits over time. Some of it is concretely monetary, but then there are other values to the culture and the life of place that those things create that I think on the front end of the conversation, we have to be very intentional about saying how every household, every resident, every institution will benefit and gain.
All right, so back to you, Nia Evans, about the Ujima project and how this works. Because what you represent is what some people call a low threshold way of investing. There are many tiers so that anybody actually could be a part of it. And you make the decision about where to invest by a vote of all of the members who are invested in your project. So give us a sense of how this works.
Sure, thank you. Just very quickly, I think one of the interesting things that we've done is we've actually decoupled investing from decision-making. So when we think about just the previous round of remarks and we look at investment decision and investments and then investment how investment decisions are made, we see that they're highly correlated. And so what ends up happening is the person who with the most wealth, the person who has invested the most has the most say. And then when we think about the history of how wealth has been accumulated in this country, so we know that wealth in this country has been accumulated through through theft and extraction, and we know the systemic biases that are built into a lot of processes. If you right now find yourself without too many means, then you find yourself out of that decision making process, and so that's why it's really important that we've decoupled that. So we have investors, as you've said, who can invest as little as $50 into the fund. And I do just want to say really quickly, the fund is closed for investment right now. So we're not currently taking any more investments. But we've made it very accessible so that those who previously found themselves unable to invest in private businesses, and that's maybe another kind of distinction that we can talk about, now have that opportunity. So they now have that opportunity through their investment in the fund and through their voice through voting to support directly projects like Jazz Urbane Cafe, for example. And then where we've decoupled it is membership is actually like membership in many organizations, which is it's by application. You sign up online, you pay dues, and you're a member of Ujima. And we have two broad tiers of membership. We have a voting member, and those are residents of Boston proper. And then we have solidarity members, which are residents outside of Boston proper. And so essentially and it's the voting members who vote. So essentially what we're saying is it is your residence. It is your presence in the area. It is the contributions that the varied contributions that you make as a resident that entitles you to power over decision-making about what happens in your neighborhood. And that's why we've decoupled it. And so while residents can invest, they're not required to vote. And then I won't go into detail about the voting process, but as we review each investment deal, goes before our voting members. Our quorum is 50% plus one of our voting members. And we do that because we say we would like to be able to say that at least a majority of our voting members have supported this. And it's an ambitious percentage. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it works. I think the other thing that I want to mention is a part of our process is something called community standards. And so in 2018, we went through a 4-month process. We looked at 8 different categories, ownership, management, environment, workers' rights, et cetera. And we asked UGMA members and community members, what are the minimum requirements that you think a business should be able, should have to meet, whatever their size, whatever their tenure, whatever their sector, in terms of good business practices to receive investment from us. And so Jazz Urbane Cafe, for example, went through that screening. We have 36 minimum standards and they are invited by our Community Standards Committee, which is an elected body of the UGMA membership. So just want to mention that additional layer that we not only invest in BIPOC-owned businesses, we invest in BIPOC-owned businesses with positive social impact, and that positive social impact was determined by our voting members as well.
Okay. Terry, I'm making a jaunt over to you now before we get into the details of Jazz Urbane Cafe, because I want to underscore something that you underscore, which this is really about ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, I love the model that that Nia just described. And it is about ownership and also about responsibility to our community. But ownership and business ownership is really key. We have to own our businesses. We have to own our communities, you know, home ownership. That is really the way that we have to build wealth and build community wealth. And that ownership provides us with a sense of control so that we can decide, you know, what's in our community. It's not necessarily the business that makes, you know, a lot of money that's necessarily the right business for our community. You know, we've had, you know, liquor stores on every corner for, you know, eons. That's not necessarily the right business, you know, for our community. So the key is ownership, and it's also responsibility. Mm-hmm. We, in trying to close the racial wealth gap, we have really pressed our community to focus on business ownership. And what I will say is not just business ownership of startups, even though those are important, but also to acquire existing businesses. A lot of businesses in our community were started in the 60s, in the 70s. You know, those owners are getting up in age. And, you know, I really want to encourage our young people to start focusing on acquiring some of those businesses. We just introduced a new lending program specifically for that with an organization, a Black-led fintech called Lendistry, that is actually providing financing to acquire businesses. So ownership is the key. Look at startup, you know, look at also acquiring existing businesses so that we can continue to own our community.
Well, Nia Grace, that's exactly what you did. Not that who you bought it from was old, but I'm but you stepped up and looked at an existing business and then expanded upon that. And you've talked about that without the kind of support that you got, I mean, you were challenged at every point about being an owner in that space.
Absolutely. I think that owning Darryl's Corner Bar and Kitchen is special. I'm from the neighborhood. I'm from Roxbury. I've lived, throughout the city a bit. But this piece right here is special. And I understood that prior to ownership, I had an opportunity to work there, invest my time there. And I knew it was something that I definitely wanted when presented the opportunity. Additionally, though, this is a tough market to get into in the city of Boston. The Boston Black Hospitality Coalition will talk about the less than 1% of African-American owned licenses for full restaurant venues, and Darrell's is one of them. And without that relationship, we may not have even had that additional venue in our neighborhood or even in our realm and control at this point. So to me, that tradition of to which Terry is speaking of purchasing and acquiring businesses that are critical to our neighborhood and to our culture is one way that we continue our legacy as well as continue the wealth building. And then to that point, in doing well in those businesses, we're able to start new ventures like the Underground Cafe and Lounge or like Jazz Urbane Cafe.
All right. Teron, Jazz Urbane Cafe, which I'm very excited about. And this is all because of the models that we're talking about in terms of community wealth building, about, as Ania Grace has just said, looking forward to other businesses, as Nia Evans has said, having a foundation of people who decide for themselves what they want in their community. And then we got folks like yourself who are excited, drawn in by Dr. Bill Banfield, who is a part of this. Explain what the Jazz Urbane Cafe is going to be and how the support of UGMA Project is helping.
Certainly. Well, one, thank you for giving the due acknowledgement to Dr. Banfield here. You know, this is really the brainchild of Bill Banfield, former director of Africana Studies at Berklee College of Music, who, when he arrived in Boston to start playing that role, even after having been a college student himself here, really imagined the integration of arts into the life of the city and in places like local restaurants. And so those partnerships began with Darrell's. I mean, we've known Nia Grace for a long time, and Nia Grace is now on the leadership team for Jazz Urbane Cafe, because when you want the best of the best, you've got to go to the Nia Graces of the world. I'd like to think that if Prince were a restaurateur, he would have been Nia Grace. She's a rock star. So this was really about coalescing around that vision, around the knowledge of the arts community in Boston. There is a deep bench of players and artists across media. We wanted to make sure that they had a home where they could be featured. I think as the city started to think about how it would further activate Nubian Square and really build on a lot of momentum that organizations like Black Market and Nubian Gallery and Haley House have already been building, it wanted to figure out how to further activate the bowling building and put an anchor in the square. And so this is an opportunity to create an attraction after 4 or 5 o'clock in Roxbury. This is the opportunity to open a door to community and to community building that extends to Roxbury and other neighborhoods. And we think that it's an opportunity to create a regional attraction that has its center in the heart of Boston's Black community, if not the regional Black community. We're excited to be partnered with UGMA on this, whom we went to first in about 2020 or 2019, because we wanted to make sure that the stake that the community had in this was not just as customers, but as Terry said, as owners, and that we could do so in a way where the barriers around individual investor accreditation and some other things didn't get in the way. If you wanted to do a dollar, you could do a dollar. If you wanted to do $50,000, you could do it. But there's an opportunity for you to say, Jazz Urbane Cafe is my home and I have an ownership stake in that.
One of the things that you have mentioned that I think is important to note is that you say community wealth building's time frame or schedule might be very different from what people have seen in other spaces with the kind of capitalism processes that we're very familiar with. Somebody puts down this money, next week you start rolling with the building, and then the doors are open 6 months down the road. That this is really, when we say building, you mean building over time.
Yes. So, you know, the speed of community is a different speed than, say, the speed of government or speed of the private sector. It can approximate it, maybe, but what it's aiming for is a consensus. And it's hard sometimes to get to that consensus. However, that consensus is much richer and I think has a lot more worth than just the dollars, because now that we've got a community of folks who have said to us, Jazz Urbane Cafe has our stamp of approval, We know that folks are going to come through the door when it opens. We know that folks are going to give us the support that we need to get the doors open as well. And we'll feel that this is theirs for the experiencing, for the having. That consensus goes a long way. That will support us for years to come.
So Nia Evans, when you say the fund is closed right now, are y'all just rolling in the dough? What's happening?
temporarily. So it's a $5 million fund. Our investment capital goal was $4.5 million, and we reached that goal last year. And so we've closed it to investments. The other, just as an aside, just some fun technical knowledge, the other $500,000 out of that $5 million is a grant pool that we set aside just in the case of losses, bad debt, et cetera. Hopefully we don't have to use it, but it's there to be prepared. So that's why we've closed it. And now our focus is on deployment, which we're really excited about. So we're looking to make $1 million to $1.25 million in investment this year. And there will be a new fund. So there will be new opportunities to invest. So we're conceptualizing that fund and even thinking about how community members can play a role in the design of that fund. And while I have the floor, if it's okay, and of course, feel free to cut me off, I just wanted to talk a little bit about our relationship with Jazzurbain and something great that we did in 2019 that I think is emblematic of what we're talking about here. So Ron and I, and Ron and Aaron Tanaka, who's one of the co-founders of Ujima, we've known each other for a while. And when Ron came to us and talked to us about Jazzurbain, we were immediately pretty excited and said, yeah, let's talk. There were a couple of things with that. So one is that was outside of our process. So our process is businesses have to be named by community members to be considered for investment. We do neighborhood assemblies and citywide assemblies where we ask community members, name businesses that you love. And we also ask them, name businesses that you think we need. And so we were so excited. We later realized, oh no, this is out of process. And so I would say an important part of community wealth building, and I see Terry nodding, and I'm sure we're all familiar with having engaged in different types of processes in our communities where we've felt left out or not appropriately included, or there hasn't been enough transparency or hasn't quite felt above board. We said, we actually need to be transparent here. We cannot say that we are community led, and then here we are engaging in a conversation that didn't start with community members. So we communicated with our members and we said, here's what happened. We were so excited. We started this conversation without talking with you first. We held a vote that asked, can we continue this conversation with Jazzurbain? And every single person who voted said yes. The other thing that we did that I thought was just great, and I think really speaks to the power of building community consensus, was we actually collaborated with Jazzurbain on a night in the bowling building to give people an idea of what it would be like to experience Jazzurbain. And there wasn't just kind of the tasting menu and the music and the art. So we did that. We displayed what Jazzurbain would actually provide, but we also opened up conversations because of our community standards. And so what we said to Jazzurbain was, if you're in the restaurant industry, one of our standards is you cannot pay the sub minimum wage. You have to pay at least minimum wage. Mm. The compensation ratio is 5-1 from the highest paid to the lowest paid worker. And so what Jazzurbain said is, okay, but the restaurant industry is a low margin industry. Understand this creates some trade-offs we have to think about. And so we were actually able to have that conversation with community members, where we were able to talk with community members and say, to be able to provide a certain wage scale, this is what prices would look like.
Right.
And so I think that's a great conversation for community members to be able to engage in. It's not only investing, but also understanding a little bit more behind the scenes, what it takes to operate a business in certain industries. And so then I think transforming the relationship into a partnership.
And just understanding that it's a holistic, when we say community wealth building, it's a holistic process. Terry, I'm turning to you in these last moments of the show to talk about the fact that often our communities are thought of as having deficits as opposed to focusing on the assets to be in position to build community wealth. Would you speak to that?
briefly. Yes, absolutely. there is a tendency to talk about our communities as you know, from our challenges as opposed to from our assets. And this is an example, you know, I call Daryl old. I feel old too. These are the young people that we have that have a whole different model, a whole different way of doing things. And it really is an example of our assets. You know, we spend, you know, you look at the Black community, we spend over $1 trillion a year. You know, we have people that are engaged in our community, and you know, everybody wants to talk about the unemployment, but what about the employment, the people that go to work every day in our community? You know, even thinking about Nubian Square, I mean, what's fabulous about this idea is that in the at night, Nubian Square is quiet. It's an opportunity to really build, you know, some type of nightlife for our community that is walking distance from the residents. And so we have a lot of assets that we can take advantage of. Okay. We have, you know, STEM right down the corner, Madison Park. We have, you know, we have Benjamin Franklin Institute coming into our community. So we have tremendous assets that that we need to take advantage of and not define ourselves by our challenges.
Well, that's a good place to leave the conversation. I thank all of you for joining me. That's the end of our broadcast, end of the show. And now stay with us as we continue on our digital platforms, Facebook and YouTube.